You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up on Wisconsin Life, we'll talk about graduation day memories and your advice for the class of 2016.
First, we've heard a lot in recent years about gun violence around the United States and in Milwaukee in particular, which saw a surge in gun deaths and injuries last year. A new documentary from Wisconsin Public Television goes beyond the headlines and statistics and tells the story of the human cost of gun violence, especially on children and their families.
Frederica Freiberg joins us now. She's host of Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television and the producer and reporter for Too Many Candles. That documentary airs tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Television. Fred, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Well, the story is out there in the newspapers a lot. What were you trying to tackle in this documentary?
We wanted to look at why there was an upsurge in homicides in Milwaukee in 2015. I don't know if you remember, but particularly last summer, you just couldn't pick up the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, frankly, without reading more and more headlines. And it really captured our attention in an unfortunate way on the television side. And so we decided to go to Milwaukee and find out what this was all about.
I want to look at one of the stories you told. And sadly, speaking of last summer, Tariq Akbar was shot and killed on 4th of July last year. And I just want to share some of the voices, the people who have been close to him. This will be his mother, his brother, his big brother and big sister from that program, and his teacher.
You know, my son was too young. He was too young to die.
Every time when I wake up, I be waking up just to see if he, one day I wake up and he be playing the game like he always usually do.
He just liked to laugh. He liked to be silly. He liked to have fun. And he really liked people.
Tariq was a leader, but he was one that I will always try to redirect his leadership skill in a positive way because he was 14.
So you start the documentary with Tariq's story. Can you tell it to us?
Tariq was 14 years old. He went to the 4th of July fireworks down on the lakefront in Milwaukee with his two older brothers. And his mom had given them a ride down there, and she had arranged to pick them up just like any mom of teenagers would do. You know, oh, yes, she said they begged to go to the fireworks this year, last year. And she allowed them to do that, but they had an agreed-upon meeting place, and she was going to pick them up. She couldn't reach them, and she, you know, was really kind of getting frantic about that. And then finally she reached them, and she learned that her youngest, 14-year-old Tariq, had been shot while he was at the fireworks show, and it was over a Facebook dispute between two groups of people that did not involve him. His mother says he was walking away from the fireworks when someone opened fire as part of this dispute, and he took a bullet to the head, and he died there with his two older brothers standing over him trying to help him but failing.
Looking back on the year, Tariq could just be one statistic in a body count in Milwaukee. Do you think that we in the public and the media look closely enough at stories like Tariq's and get to understand who he lost?
That's a really good question, because the numbers do start to mount and they do become statistics. But when you go in and you sit in the living room and visit in the home of Tariq's family, you just learn so much about these people and these victims. And you know, some of this was unexpected, really, that he had all these people around him.
He had a team.
He did. And so many people said he was so smart, you know, and he was funny. And everyone in his world expected him to grow up and be one of those people that really makes a difference.
Talking to Frederica Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television. Her new documentary, Too Many Candles, airs tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Television. You talk to a lot of people, Fred, about gun violence in Wisconsin. Did you just start to get a sense that this was something that was weighing on people who had either been directly impacted or just knew this was out there and potentially in their lives?
Well, in Milwaukee, it's hard to overstate it. You know, a lot of times when we were working on this, I would ask myself, are we overstating this because we're hearing from all these voices, and you know, are we sensationalizing this? But then you go down and you talk to people, and you realize day to day that we're not. I mean, people are sad, they're scared, they're stressed. Children, we've been told, grow up with this kind of trauma that the city is now trying to address through the schools and otherwise. So in Milwaukee, people, we learned through our reporting, are actually afraid to go outside. We've been told that after sunset, people stay in their homes. You'll see that their blinds are closed. They just don't want to be involved in that. And yet, as we saw in Milwaukee just last Thursday, mm-hmm. another child in her home was struck by a bullet because shooters were out on her street.
You didn't focus just on the loss and the fear there. You also talked to people trying to rally a response here, community leaders, government officials. Let's start with community groups. What kind of things did you see?
We focused in on one group that I met the people from an organization called Running Rebels. They had representatives at a Milwaukee Homicide Review Commission meeting, and I talked further with that representative and then got hooked up with Running Rebels. This is an organization in Milwaukee that was founded 35 years ago by one Victor Barnett, who back then saw the trouble that gangs were causing in his city. And that's an example of an organization that just almost literally takes children in mm-hmm. and helps them. But there, I have to believe there are thousands of organizations in Milwaukee. The one thing we were told was that many of these organizations are kind of siloed, that they haven't come together to work on this in a concerted effort. But I did also just read that at the news conference in Milwaukee last Thursday about this 9-year-old girl who was shot in her home, there were a number of people, a number of representatives from different organizations, and a reporter on the scene at that press conference said it was the first time she had seen that, people coming together.
How about official response? You talked to Mayor Barrett in this. We see police press conferences announcing details of the homicides. What are we hearing from them?
Of course, it's devastating for the mayor of that city. And I, having interviewed him, I believe he takes it extremely seriously and personally. One part of our documentary, he tells us that every time there is a shooting or a homicide, he gets a text message. And he has hundreds of those on his phone, and he has never erased a single one. He wants to very much reduce this, if not eliminate this problem in his city. He believes that economic development is certainly one key to that, and he looks to things like the Bucks Arena that's going to be built.
This is a problem. You talk to some people who say, we've been working on this 20 years or 30 years in some cases. You started off by saying you were going to try to get to the answer of why there was this increase in gun violence last year. We've heard from experts on this show who say they don't know. They're not sure. Is there any kind of sense from anybody that they're seeing, apart from that economic development you mentioned, they're seeing what steps need to be taken?
I think a lot of steps are being taken in a lot of different arenas. Police are doing different kinds of enforcements. The Milwaukee Homicide Review Commission does a lot of work around collecting data and determining causes. This past year, they determined that disputes and retaliation were way up as causes for gun violence. And so they work around trying to figure out how to reduce that. So there's conflict resolution kind of programming and that kind of thing.
Did you hear from people who feel hopeful amidst all of this?
I did hear from people who feel hopeful, particularly people in neighborhoods where they are seeing some kind of effort toward economic development, bringing neighborhoods back. And I think they think if they can coalesce around some of these efforts and come together themselves, that will make a difference.
Fred, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Frederica Freiberg, host of Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television. She's the producer and reporter for the new documentary, Too Many Candles. It airs tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Television.
Coming up on Wisconsin Life, we'll be taking your calls, asking you to share your best advice for new college graduates. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up after today's Wisconsin Life, we'll talk about graduation day here in Wisconsin and ask for your advice.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. What advice do you have for new graduates? If you're graduating this spring, what are you nervous about, maybe excited about? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll take your calls in just a few minutes. On Wisconsin Life Now, graduation is a big event in the lives of students and their families. It's also a big event for the people who work at those ceremonies. Ken Szymanski recalls his time as a photographer's assistant for graduation at UW-Eau Claire.
Like an old photograph, the events took time to develop. I was an undergraduate working as an usher at yet another 1990s UW-Eau Claire commencement ceremony. The jobs were standard. Don't let anyone use this door, keep this aisle clear, don't let people congregate here, etc. But before the ceremony started, they called an audible. The photographer's assistant was sick. They asked me to take his place. The photographer explained that he would take a picture of every student with brand new diploma, shaking hands with the chancellor on his or her way across the stage. He needed to ensure that the correct picture proof was mailed the correct student. Enter the photographer's assistant. Step 1. Sit by the stage discreetly. Step 2. As each graduate is called up, whisper the person's name into a handheld tape recorder along with a quick physical description. While condensing hundreds of individuals' physical descriptions in relentless 5-second increments was challenging enough, UW-Eau Claire's lack of diversity at the time made this even more difficult. Add the matching caps and gowns factor, and the photographer's assistant job became the toughest in the gym. My descriptions went like this. Robin Anderson, dark hair, glasses, somewhat short. John Craker, male, shaggy bangs, white collar. Jane Johnson, black hair, gaudy necklace. Trying to make each of these distinct after a few hundred became a challenge, as did avoiding negative descriptions such as goofy looking. Mark Smith, brown hair, medium height, average. Richard Stein, standard, average male, medium brown hair. Jennifer Sturtz, female, I don't know, pass. While to me they all started to blur together, the chancellor's job was to make each one feel as if the whole ceremony has led up to the handshake. And the crowd, though they were asked to hold their applause until the end, started chipping away at the rule. After the first few dozen graduates crossed the stage in silence, someone cracked the Midwestern decorum. Way to go, Britzo! The crowd laughed. College security did nothing, which opened the door to other revelers. A dozen students later, you made it, Josie! Parents, grandparents, siblings waited not just hours, but years, decades for this moment. They were bursting to acknowledge it. This is not just any graduate, parents thought. This is our son, our daughter, our story. Eventually, graduates find jobs, get married, and have babies. Babies that, in the hospital, all kind of look the same. These babies need ID tags on their wrists and ankles to avoid mix-ups. That isn't just any baby, each of those parents will think. She's going somewhere. This one is special. Someday these kids, too, will each walk across the stage, shake hands with authority, and exit down the stairs into the past. But not before we take a picture. Rest assured, we'll take lots and lots of pictures.
Ken Szymanski is a writer and teacher in Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. For more info, visit wisconsinlife.org.
We just heard some graduation day memories, and we'd love to hear from you right now. What do you wish someone had told you when you graduated? What advice do you have for new graduates? And if you were the one out there making a graduation speech, what would you want to tell the class of 2016 about what's important in life?
Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. College graduation season, of course, getting off to a start now. A lot of the schools around the state will have their graduations over the next couple of weeks. High school graduation not far behind. And it's a good time to think, what lessons would you want to impart to the class of 2016, whether you're talking college, university, or high school? What do they need to know? What do you wish someone had told you on graduation day? If you could go back in time and tell yourself something like that, what would it be? Call in at 800-642-1234. You are our guest, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. I don't have a lot. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm this great bearer of wisdom. I guess what I'd tell people is, like, it never hurts to learn stuff, and you might come back later and find out that it actually is useful, even if you didn't think it was back then.
That's kind of inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, that's
a little bit.
It's sort of vaguely inspiring, I hope.
I think that I wish I had known that it would be really, really confusing when I graduated from college. That being in open water with no direction was going to feel like everything was turned completely upside down, and that I should just expect that, and that it would be okay, and eventually I would find my way forward.
You were dropped in open water after graduation? Oh, you're speaking metaphorically.
What, your parents didn't do that?
I wish they'd taught me more about metaphors, because, I was just pretty
clearly
oblivious to them after high school and college. And what was the famous Kurt Vonnegut one, where his main advice at a commencement was,
wear sunscreen.
Wear sunscreen. I guess that's pretty good, and I'd add wear sunglasses. I didn't find out how important that was. Ooh, and ear protection if you're in a band. Yeah, so the basics, get those covered. We'll go to our callers now, 800-642-1234, with your graduation day advice for graduates. And we've got Don on the line in B-Town. Don, hi.
There you go, B-Town.
And what's your advice, Don?
Get in bottled water as soon as you can.
But as an investment?
Or start doing it yourself somehow.
Worried about water quality, I guess, Don. Thanks for that advice. So that's like the advice from the movie The Graduate.
Plastics,
right?
Solid.
That's the advice there. Thanks, Don, for getting us started at 800-642-1234. Graduation season in Wisconsin, and I guess elsewhere too. Looking for your graduation day advice for the class of 2016. You can go college. You can go high school. It's up to you. 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We've got Adam on the line now in Kenosha. Adam, hi.
Hi.
What's your advice, Adam?
So my piece of advice is one that was passed along to me at my very first job out of college. I was told that you have to be careful to pay attention to anyone who gives you advice, because regardless of how stupid you may think they are or incompetent, everybody has something to teach you. So always look out for those learning opportunities in your job, and that's really served me well through my whole career.
Great, Adam. Thank you so much. Being open to learning opportunities, you can learn something from anyone. That's a good rule of thumb for life, definitely. And echoes a little bit what you were saying, Rob, about learning something.
Learn stuff.
It could come in handy down the road.
Well, that's very inspiring, because maybe there's something useful people can even learn from me, which I wouldn't have expected.
So no one would have thought that. Well, Adam, we appreciate that. And we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you wish you'd known when you graduated? Was there something that you figured out later that sure would have been handy to know earlier? Let us know at 800-642-1234. If you've also got a favorite graduation day memory, something that stuck with you, did you toss your cap in the air? Did you go to your graduation? Let us know at 800-642-1234.
Go back to our callers with Gina on the line in Menasha. Gina, hi.
Hi there.
What's your advice, Gina?
My advice is to not be in too much of a hurry to check the boxes of a conventional life. Graduate, get a job, buy a house, get married. All of those things are good, but sometimes you can be in too much of a hurry to go there.
Interesting. And did you learn that the hard way, or did you kind of stumble on that and it worked out?
You bet I learned it the hard way.
Oh, no. Well, Gina, thank you so much for that cautionary advice for the next generation. I hope it all worked out for you in the long run.
Gina, we appreciate that. And we're going to go next to Carolyn in Sun Prairie. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. I was just thinking that a high school graduate, my advice would be to not make it all about the money. Don't make your, you know, your choice of majors, your choice of career or anything, you know, all about the money you're going to make in doing that, because even money doesn't keep you motivated as much as happiness and self-fulfillment and things like that. And then college, I would say to take advantage of any opportunities that come up. A lot of times you get out of college and your ability to, you know, pick up on Friday and head out of town for a long weekend doing something goofy is far more limited. And so anything that comes up that you can do in those college years, do it. And, you know, any learning opportunities or fun opportunities, equally important.
Great. Carolyn, thank you so much. Some great advice there for high school graduates and college graduates. Interesting. Carolyn saying, kind of be a dreamer. Don't make it about the money. Believe in your dreams.
All right. Well, good luck to anyone graduating this year. And by the way, you can keep sharing your graduation season advice for new graduates. Head on over to the Central Time Facebook page. Coming up, a look at outsourcing and jobs here in Wisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thinking of a time with only you and I makes me sorry that it had to end that way. Learn my lesson, now there's nothing left to say. Graduation day. Oh. Graduation day.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight at 7 on Reveal, a look at Title IX, the historic law meant to bridge the gender gap in schools. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, the Wisconsin labor market looks like it'll be seeing a number of changes in the next year. Spectrum Brands announced that it would be adding 60 people in its Middleton, Wisconsin offices, but would be outsourcing 15 accounting-related jobs to India.
And Caterpillar announced last week that it'll be moving engineering and technology jobs from South Milwaukee to Tucson, Arizona. Caterpillar, which has 900 employees in Milwaukee, didn't say how many people would lose their jobs, but the move is expected to have a major impact on the economy.
And Madison's Oscar Mayer plant has plans to shut down completely in 2017. According to when it first announced the closure in 2015, the company said more than 1,000 jobs would be lost in the Madison area.
And this all comes as Governor Walker highlights what he calls an economic comeback for Wisconsin. Abdur Chaudhry joins us now for a look at Wisconsin's job future. He's a professor of economics at Marquette University. Abdur, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, the Journal Sentinel published a piece from Governor Walker about what he calls Wisconsin's comeback, and he has lots of data points there citing what he sees as a strong economic turn for Wisconsin to the better. So do you agree with that? Is Wisconsin experiencing an economic comeback?
Basically, two things are happening. On one hand, Governor Walker is right. We are creating jobs in Wisconsin. The unemployment number has come down. In the last year, we have created a number of jobs. The problem is, the jobs that we are creating here are low-paying, low-skilled jobs. We are creating jobs in the leisure industry, in hospitality, in those industries where they don't pay much. We are not creating enough jobs in the high-paying, high-skilled areas, such as manufacturing, construction. And those are the areas you see the companies are leaving the state. So that's basically the true picture that you will find.
Do you ever see those low-paying jobs as being something that tend to lead the higher-paying jobs? Is there any sort of pattern there that we could look to?
At this point, it is. Because of the increasing number of low-paying jobs that we are creating, what we are seeing in Wisconsin is that wages are relatively flat, wage growth. Wages are not growing, and if wages don't grow, income is not going to increase. So that's one of the problems we see in Wisconsin.
Well, let's talk about some of these companies that are leaving Wisconsin, or at least sending jobs elsewhere. Caterpillar, Oscar Mayer closing, Spectrum's parent company. These are all examples of companies that are either outsourcing jobs or closing or moving jobs to different states. Why do you see that as happening at this particular point in Wisconsin's economic history?
There are a couple of reasons, actually. Obviously, there is a global trend that we see manufacturing jobs moving to areas where they get more incentive, they have lower costs. For example, Oscar Mayer has moved to Iowa. One of the reasons is they received a significant amount of incentive from the government, in state government in Iowa. That's one reason we see many firms are leaving. Also, in the food industry especially, there is a lot of consolidation going on, and that is leading to this firms leaving.
Taken together, these three companies, Caterpillar, Oscar Mayer, Spectrum, as latest examples of this, do you expect this to have an influence on Wisconsin's economy, and if so, how much?
It will have some impact on the economy. There will be a ripple effect, obviously. And what I'm thinking is that in the next couple of years, you will see a number of other firms leaving the state. One of the things that we have failed to do here in the state is providing incentive for firms to come in. For example, let me just give you an example. If you remember last year, there was a big fight in the state on the right to work law. You know, there was some people were arguing is that if we have the right to work law passed in Wisconsin, a lot of firms are going to come to the state. That hasn't happened. We haven't seen any inflow of firms coming to the state. On the other hand, firms are leaving the state. So we are not providing the correct incentive for firm to come in or stay in the state.
Well, what kind of incentive would be, do you think, the right incentive to convince a company to come here or to stay here in Wisconsin?
Obviously, firms basically look at a number of things. They look at the tax structure. They look at the infrastructure in the state. They look at what type of labor morale exists in the state. In all these areas, I don't think we are doing a good job. For example, you can take the case of WEDC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which is supposed to help attract businesses into the state, but we have seen a lot of internal problems in that corporation, and that has failed to do its job.
We're talking right now with Abdur Chaudhry, professor of economics at Marquette University, looking at the jobs outlook in Wisconsin amid cuts in jobs from major Wisconsin employers like Caterpillar and Oscar Mayer. And you said that there are things that, you know, other states may be doing better. Iowa, for instance, has taken Oscar Mayer, but are there things that you think Wisconsin in particular, to flesh this out a bit, that Wisconsin is doing particularly poorly at?
One thing that we have failed to do is infrastructure development. We haven't invested much in infrastructure, and this is where I always give the example of Iowa. If you look at the last 5 years, Iowa has significantly increased their investment in IT, information technology, and that has helped to attract a lot of firms in the state. So that's an area we can look at. One thing that the Wisconsin state government has started to do is retrain some of the workers that are losing their jobs. That's something we also need to emphasize. So that will reduce some of the adverse impact that these firms, when they leave the state, it has on the state economy.
What kind of training would that look like if we had a program that you thought was doing the job to retrain workers?
Here we can bring we can take the help of the technical colleges. For instance, we have a number of two-year colleges in the state. So, for example, let's take the case of the workers who lost their jobs in Oscar Mayer. Now, obviously, some of them may not be able to go back to work in a food industry where their skills will be useful. So we may have to retrain some of those workers so that they can work in other industries, for example. Now, here, obviously, there's a question. If you say this to someone who is, you know, a 60-year-old, if you tell him that he needs to retrain himself, obviously, that will be a big problem. He may not want to be retrained at this stage in his career. But when you talk of the younger workers who are in the 30s and 40s, obviously, retraining will help them to a large extent.
Now, some analysts say that Wisconsin doesn't have the skilled workers that it needs to meet employers' needs. Do you agree with that? Is that something that Wisconsin could do better at?
Yes, I do. In fact, I wrote on this a number of times, the mismatch of skill that we have here in the state. The firms that we have, they need a certain skill, certain type of skill, but we simply don't have workers having that skill, the number of workers that we need. So this is where, you know, both the private and public partnership can work to provide skills that will be helpful for the workers.
To come back to what you said earlier when we began talking about the low-paying jobs being the area of the largest growth, if you were to write a prescription for Wisconsin, what would you suggest for drawing those high-paying jobs to Wisconsin or keeping them?
Obviously, by high-paying jobs, we are talking about the financial industry, the manufacturing industry, construction industry. Those are the areas where jobs will be high-paying and it will require high-skilled. So we do need to encourage, you know, firms in those areas to sort of expand, provide them whatever they need in order to expand their plant, hire more workers. So we need to work with companies in those areas to see how we can, you know, increase the demand for workers in those areas, and we can provide skills for those type of workers.
We're talking right now with Amdur Chaudhry, professor of economics at Marquette University, talking about the jobs outlook in Wisconsin amid cuts from major Wisconsin employers like Caterpillar and Oscar Mayer.
You can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. Have you been affected by cuts, layoffs at companies outsourcing or moving to other states? Or is there a new employer in your community making a big difference on the local economy? What is the magic sauce? What would it take to boost jobs here in Wisconsin, either by bringing in companies from out of state or by promoting local companies? And what is your view of the state of the state economy? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our conversation now with Amdur Chaudhry, professor of economics at Marquette University. And we're talking about upcoming plans from employers like Caterpillar and Oscar Mayer to cut operations in Wisconsin, meaning the loss of hundreds of jobs, and whether those cuts are balanced out by job creation maybe elsewhere.
Governor Walker wrote a piece published in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel pointing toward a low unemployment number here in the state as evidence of an economic comeback. Call in at 800-642-1234. How well do you think Wisconsin jobs are rebounding after the Great Recession? Have you been affected by a company moving operations elsewhere or by a company moving into your area? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our callers now. We've got Guy joining us in West Allis. Guy, hi.
Hi. What about encouraging more unions in the state of Wisconsin, especially for skilled trade sets? Mind you, unions don't just negotiate wages and benefits. They also provide apprenticeship programs. When they're established enough, they actually provide schools and classrooms to get people up to the skill sets that they need in their workplace.
Guy, thank you so much for that question. And differing schools of thought here, Amdur, but what about encouraging unions?
Sure, that would be a very good thing. And the problem here is, obviously, as all of us know, in Wisconsin, the state and the union basically are, you know, 180 degrees apart. So I'm not sure whether the Scott Walker administration would be willing to work with the union on this issue. But that's a way to go forward. I agree with the caller's idea.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. And we're going to go next to Becky in Cedarburg. Hello, Becky.
Hi there. I'm just calling to, I forgot the guest name, I apologize.
Amdur Chaudhry, yeah, that's okay.
He was talking about retraining employees. I have been out, I left work about a year and a half ago, have started back at a technical college, but it's going to take me 3 years to get a degree at full time. And that's in a health information technology program. And that's besides the fact that you have to pass basic reading, math, and English skills.
Becky, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. And Amdur, Becky talking about a long road ahead to retrain herself. I mean, what happens to someone like that, like Becky, in the meantime, if she's looking to make a decent wage?
Yeah, unfortunately, retraining has its, you know, pitfalls, and that's one of the things that it's not a quick, you know, solution to anything. It will take time, but that's the best alternative we have at this time for those who unfortunately are losing their jobs because of these firms moving out of state.
Are there any states who are doing better at getting ahead of that ball and training workers, giving them options maybe before something like that happens?
Yes, they do. I do know cases in Massachusetts, for example. They have the state government has initiated a number of programs where first, obviously, they try hard to keep firms and industries within the state, but once they hear that a firm is leaving the state, then they take immediate steps to find jobs or retrain the workers that are losing their jobs. So Massachusetts is an example that we can look at.
Becky, thanks a lot for the call, and good luck to you. And a very quick call here maybe from Adam in Kenosha. Adam, hi.
Hi. Up until the tail end of last year, I worked at Case New Holland down in Racine. They manufacture ag and construction equipment, and one of the things that we found was that the ag and construction globally really took a hit when the American downturn happened. It happened all over the world, and especially with South America, they've had a lot of financial issues, and I think that's really, it took an impact on the entire industry as a whole, so both Case, Cat now that's moving out, and other brands like John Deere, they're all struggling right now.
Adam, thanks a lot for that. I appreciate you sharing that. And Abdur, quickly as we wrap up, what about the ag industry taking a hit? Has the agriculture industry bounced back, and what do you expect?
Not yet. And one of the reasons is that if I can just spend a couple of seconds on this, globally we have seen this because of the slowdown that we see in China. China was a big consumer of a lot of commodities worldwide. Now, as the Chinese economy has slowed down, demand for a number of commodities, including agriculture, has dropped. And as a result, we see the ripple effect across the globe. South American countries are not doing well. Since they are not doing well, so they are not buying our agricultural products as much as they used to. So it's sort of a ripple effect you see globally.
And we leave it there. Abdur, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on your program.
That was Abdur Chaudhry, professor of economics at Marquette University. And we're talking there about job creation prospects here in Wisconsin as news hits of several companies losing jobs or outsourcing them.
Final recommendations to the Great Lakes governors may be coming this week on Waukesha's plan to pipe in drinking water from Lake Michigan. A committee of representatives from the 10 Great Lakes states and Canadian provinces will take up that proposal again during meetings in Chicago.
Waukesha's landmark diversion proposal, which would be the first time under a 2008 agreement that a community just outside the Great Lakes Basin would get lake water, has mainly been hung up on which towns around Waukesha would also qualify.
But some critics still hope for a closer look at the other end of the process. Waukesha's plan to return treated wastewater to the lake by sending it down the Root River, which flows through Racine. Chuck Kornbach reports.
The last few miles of the route before it empties into the lake is a popular stretch to fish for trout and salmon, but on this day, Racine resident Mike Larry is just relaxing and trying to hook a catfish or carp.
It's peaceful out here, you know. It's good water, good body of water out here, and a lot of fun.
Larry says he hasn't heard much about Waukesha's plan to send 8 million gallons of treated wastewater down the route every day, but he says the proposal bears watching. Some politicians and others in Racine are already doing that and voicing their concerns.
So we're in an area now that the city's redeveloping and calling Machinery Row.
A little closer to the lake, State Representative Corey Mason stands outside a dilapidated former engine plant on riverfront property that Mason says is now ready to be redeveloped. The Racine Democrat says the city and the developer plan to spend at least $65 million on the project, and Mason doesn't want treated wastewater, literally fouling things.
It just doesn't seem fair, really, that we're doing everything we can to revitalize the river, and Waukesha upstream, they're able to put their discharge, their treated sewage, into the river. And we're worried about what it means for the health of the river, but also the viability of big economic development projects like this.
The route in Racine is not pristine. It's impaired by long-ago industrial discharges and by upstream farm and road runoff in Racine and Milwaukee counties. But Representative Mason says there's a plan to clean up that pollution, which he says would also help Lake Michigan. That would be on top of earlier efforts to boost lakeside recreation near the mouth of the river. Gulls hover and cry above North Beach, which has been cleaned up over the last 15 years and won a national award. Todd Brennan of the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network says it's finally reached the point where school children have only heard good things about the 2,500 feet of shoreline.
That was a critical moment where you have an entire generation of students who grow up knowing exactly what it means to have their expectations met at the beach. It's clean, it's healthy, it's a place for them to come, to enjoy.
Brennan says that's all at risk if Waukesha sends wastewater down the Root River and it starts flowing north along the lake. 30 miles to the northwest, Waukesha is not buying Racine's concerns. Instead, these workers are helping upgrade Waukesha's sewage treatment plant. The plant handles the current discharge of water to the Fox River and perhaps within a few years the former lake water to the Root. Waukesha Water Utility General Manager Dan Dukniak says the treated water his city would pipe to a riverside pumping station in Franklin would not harm Racine's economic development.
There's going to be no partially treated sewage, no raw sewage that's going to be going down the Root River. You know, the only water that can make it to the return flow pump station would be fully treated. That would be of the highest quality.
And Dukniak says if the federal government would ever set standards for treatment of pharmaceuticals and viruses that make it into wastewater, Waukesha would follow that law too. He says the extra flow of water down the Root River would improve fishing and tourism for Racine during drier months. But Racine Mayor John Dickert won't rule out a lawsuit to block the return flow plan. Dickert says he'll do everything he can to protect his city and its river. Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.